This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 1205. Good afternoon. I'm Jim Goodis.
I'm Chris Kreidel. We have 76 degrees right now, going to a high of 86. And let's see what's moving the markets today as we check in with Elisa Peretti.
Well, Chris and Jim, we are moving lower. The Dow is down 170 points now. We're all the way back down to 21,286. The losses for the NASDAQ, almost 2% now. The composite falling 113 points. S&P down 23 or 1%. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index down about 1%. The tech sector has been in retreat. In fact, the losses now for the NASDAQ pulling it into the red for the month. The final word on the U.S. economy from January to March has been released. It finds GDP inched a little closer to respectability. Consumer spending and trade added more to growth than previously reported. The Commerce Department data shows the economy grew at a 1.4% annual rate. That follows the prior estimate of 1.2%. Perhaps the best piece of the report, consumer spending inched up 1.1%. The other economic note today, the job market is still signaling progress, even with an increase in filings for unemployment benefits last week. New jobless claims rose by 2,000, but the total, 244,000, does remain near the lowest level since 1973. Back to you, Jim and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, we are taking a look at the Illinois budget crisis. Is there any movement? And what happens if there is no movement? Walgreens is rearranging a major acquisition. We'll tell you about that.
And, you know, Blue Apron's got an IPO, and Michael Palumbo will be joining us to talk to us about that and what that all means. It's Technology Thursday, so we'll take a look at robots and the skill gap with Rick Cobb of Challenger Gray and Christmas here in Chicago. And finally, looking at just some of the interesting things regarding the banks and how they're reacting to all these changes in the markets as we check in with Dick Bove. All those just ahead on the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Tomorrow is the deadline for Illinois lawmakers to pass a budget before the start of the new fiscal period. If there is no agreement, it will mark the start of the third consecutive year without a spending plan. We're joined by Brian Battle, Director of Trading at Performance Trust Capital Partners here in Chicago. What happens if they don't meet the deadline, Brian?
Boy, Chris, Illinois will be in the record books again. You know, a state has never gone 2 years without having a budget, and Illinois might be entering its third. So June 30th, midnight, is a deadline for the budget to be passed. It's the end of Illinois' fiscal year. And if that happens, the rating agencies, which are the independent credit companies that sort of give states ratings between AAA and CCC, you know, depending on their determination of credit quality, have promised to make Illinois a below investment grade, or the sort of loose term for that is junk rating for the state if they don't pass a budget. So that's the most important thing that's going to happen at midnight tomorrow. There's another crisis, though, that's also sort of looming, and it's a crisis of prioritization, and that is there's a judge in Cook County, a federal judge, Judge Lefkow, is trying to figure out how much money Medicaid recipients in Illinois should get because the state is late in paying them. So right now they get about $160 million a month, and the recipients are asking for $500 million a month to get fully funded and caught up. So that's a negotiation that's taking place now, and a decision that will happen, unfortunately, exactly the same day as the last day of the fiscal year.
This is more of a political question than a financial question, but what is it that is so difficult for the two sides to come together that could put the state in such a bad state?
Yeah, and there's a couple of parts of that. The first is, you know, this isn't a typical political fight, or, you know, in Illinois and Chicago, we're used to political soap opera, and it's sort of a sport here in Cook County, but this is something that affects everyone in the state of Illinois, and in two ways. One, the cost of your government's going up because your taxes are definitely going to go up, and probably services are going to decline because the state's going to have to cut spending. So I think the intractable point where we're at now is political. As you point out, Chris is exactly right, is the governor has said, I will raise taxes, but we need to have structural reform. We need a long-term plan. And the legislature has said, hey, you're mixing these two issues up together. Let's get a budget. We need some more revenue, and then we'll figure out the structural stuff later, the long-term stuff later. And that's where the political impasse is at. And the governor has summarized it as no revenue without reform, and that's a political point in the sand, and both sides are dug in.
Brian, just real quick, how much could junk status cost the state? I've heard a lot of different answers about this. I'd love to hear your take.
Yeah, so the state of Illinois hasn't borrowed money in a couple of years because they haven't tried to access the market. But in the secondary market, so if let's say Wisconsin, which is a AA rated state right next door, a pretty good credit in the national scheme of things, if they borrow money at 2.5%, that's the rate that Wisconsin has to pay, Illinois pays around 5% to borrow money. So we pay about twice as much as Wisconsin. And so if Illinois was to borrow money tomorrow, that would amount to hundreds of millions of dollars over a life of a borrowing, and certainly tens of millions of dollars that would get sucked out of the budget, not for total debt service, but for the penalty the state has to pay for being so lowly rated. So what effectively means for all of us is that government costs more, because as a delinquent borrower, as a borrower with a bad credit rating, it costs more to borrow. Just like if your credit card rate would be really high, or your mortgage rate would be high, if you were an individual that didn't pay your bills on time and couldn't balance your budget, you'd get charged a higher rate. Illinois is just like that.
Brian Battle, who is the Director of Trading at Performance Trust Capital Partners here in Chicago, thanks for all the great news. And, of course, don't kill the messenger. He's just got the news. Coming up, Walgreens and Rite Aid scrap their merger plan. That next on the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
A wealth of information for managing your money. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Deerfield-based Walgreens has altered its plans to purchase rival Rite Aid. Let's get the latest from Bruce Japsen, Chicago-based health care writer for Forbes. Bruce, what's the reason for this?
Well, Chris and Jim, it's really interesting. Walgreens really wants these Rite Aid drugstores, and we knew that almost 2 years ago, in the fall of 2015, Walgreens made a bid of about $9 billion to buy Rite Aid. But in recent months, basically over the last year, the Federal Trade Commission has said, you know, that's just not happening because it doesn't look like they were going to allow the deal. And so Walgreens comes back and says, hey, we'll buy half the stores, and they're going to pay $5 billion in cash for them. And I think this will probably be a good deal. They're a very complicated deal because Walgreens, they were going to divest about 1,000 stores to Fred's Pharmacy, which is an emerging chain in the South, and Rite Aid was going to just be melded by Walgreens. But now Rite Aid is going to be a regional player, and Walgreens is going to end up with over 2,000 stores, largely on the East Coast, and I think it's probably going to end up to be a good deal for Walgreens.
Well, Wall Street folks who hold stock aren't against it. The stock is just about flat today, and a little to the upside. So is any of this hurtful to Walgreens, or is it going to turn out fine what they wanted originally?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I don't think we know. I mean, you know, they have sort of Amazon out there lurking, saying, hey, maybe we'll get into the pharmacy business. I don't know that they'll do that right away. But you brick-and-mortar pharmacy is not a hugely growing business, although we do have an aging population. I mean, if the Republicans scale back health care coverage, that's a wild card. But I think, and of course, Walgreens is going to have to pay Rite Aid a fairly substantial termination fee of about $300 million, plus we don't know yet, you know, all the legal costs that they incurred in doing this. The fee was actually $325 million. So I think that we'll see how Walgreens leverages this. I would look for them, and they have said as much as that they're going to introduce some cost cutting, but they certainly are going to get more leverage with health insurance companies, employers, and such if they're expanding their footprint out on the populated East Coast here.
Bruce, it's really sort of becoming more and more a two-horse race between CVS and Walgreens. What is this? Is there any way to tell what this is going to mean for consumers? Is there still enough competition?
That's a great question, because here you had the Federal Trade Commission clearly having concerns with Rite Aid buying 4,500 pharmacies and then divesting 1,200 of them, and now they're going to get 2,000. So Walgreens is going to get bigger. CVS is also bigger. So I don't think we know. I think the big competitors here are the pharmacy benefit companies and the health insurance companies, because they're going to be the ones that are going to buy them. And I mean, and we'll also see from a consumer standpoint, hey, do you still go pick up your prescriptions at a drugstore? I think older folks do. I think that younger people coming up do not do that. I think they buy their drugs, and have them mailed and do all that type of stuff. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens. I don't really understand the government's role here, because Walgreens is going to get bigger, and they're the big winner with this, although they are going to have to spend some money on breakup fees and so forth.
Thanks, Bruce. Always nice to talk with you. Bruce Japson is Chicago-based healthcare writer for Forbes, and you can hear his reports on health Monday evenings and Saturday mornings right here on News Radio WBBM. Up next, a check from the markets from Bloomberg. WBBM News Time 12:26. Let's get the latest on Wall Street with Elisa Parenti.
Chris, it keeps getting worse. Now the Dow is down 235 points, a loss of more than 1%. We are down to 21,218. NASDAQ falling more than 2%. The NASDAQ Composite falling 137 points. S&P down 32. That is a loss of 1.3%. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index down more than 1%. We've got crude oil futures giving away bigger gains that were earlier, still at 44.78. This is largely a tech sell-off that we're seeing, and it has now pulled the S&P 500 into the red for the month of June. Now let's check in with Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
Grains are being led upward by the Minnesota wheat, where we have poor quality and poor yields. They're up over 45 above 750. That's raised July wheat here up 25 at 482. Corn's up 4.5, been up 6. December 381.25, up 5. July beans up 4.25 at 918.5. Wheat from Minnesota helping pull everything, plus short covering ahead of USDA report tomorrow helping pull things higher. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Pete. I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Chris Kreidel.
And I'm Jim Goodis, and these are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are sharply lower today. We'll see what's dragging down the markets.
In Technology Thursday, the growing impact of robots on the workplace.
Federal Reserve issues results of its stress tests for banks.
The deadline for a budget is just over a day away, with the state of Illinois credit rating at the risk of falling into junk status.
Right now on Wall Street, the Dow Industrials are down 235 points, the NASDAQ off about 140. S&P 500 down 32.
AccuWeather says we're going to have some storms possibly later on today, heading up to a high of 86. More rain tonight, down to 68 degrees. Right now it's 78 degrees under sunny skies in Chicago.
Well, the markets are slumping today, and we are joined by Michael Palumbo, a founder of Third Millennium Trading and author of the book Calculated Risk. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Michael. We're seeing on the NASDAQ that it's down by more than 2 percentage points, so it's being really hit hard. What's going on here?
Well, good afternoon, Chris and Jim. You know what? I'm going to just – everyone always wants to know about what the reasons are behind market moves, and sometimes – there just aren't a lot of reasons. In this case, I would just say, you know, we have quarter ending tomorrow. So if nothing else, it's been a great first half of the year for stocks, much better than most people predicted. And so this could easily just be profit selling. You know, you've got the tech stocks down 2 to 3%, the big cap tech stocks like Apple, Google. And those stocks have done relatively well this year. So I could see people just coming in here and taking some profits.
Yeah, the tech stocks have outperformed this year, and there has been some speculation about them drawing back. What do you advise investors to do at this point?
The biggest bit of advice I tell people is to remain as diversified as you can be. So you have some technology, because that generally does do better than the overall market, and it has again this year. But you also have some high-quality bonds, and you have some maybe less crazy stocks that maybe don't move as much, so some consumer staples, and just be diversified, because if you put all your eggs in one basket, you have a day like today, you get hit pretty bad.
You talk about eggs in basket, a perfect transition to Blue Apron's IPO.
So nice segue.
Thank you. Give me some thoughts on the IPO for Blue Apron and your advice for anyone looking at it.
Well, it was disappointing in where it was priced. It ended up pricing at $10 a share, and it was looking 15 to 17 a few weeks ago. So, but let's put this in perspective. The people that started that company and everybody that invested in it early did fantastic. They all made millions of dollars, and they all did fine. But the late-stage investors, the ones that bought the last couple rounds in the private markets, got beat. And that, I think, is at least a statement to some of the VCs out there that valuations in the private market in some of these companies are very rich. And so when these companies end up going to IPO, sometimes they end up getting valued lower than where they are being valued in the private market. So people that are playing these stocks in the private market should be very careful, because Blue Apron just kind of showed that there are a lot of stocks. I'd say Uber might be one of them, where they're in the private markets at valuations that are probably too high.
For those who don't know what Blue Apron is, it is a service that delivers. You order from their menu, which is pretty high grade, and you order, and they bring you that for like 5 days. You can get your meals from them for 5 days, but they're all delivered beforehand. Now, is this a sector that has a lot of competitors?
Here's the issue. It's very crowded. I know actually personally of a gentleman who's a very successful entrepreneur who is involved in one of these companies. There's dozens of them, and that's one of the issues. The other, even more important issue, is that Amazon is talking about getting involved more in this space. Now, anytime Amazon is involved and you're competing against them, that's a pretty scary proposition. So Blue Apron is up against a very, very difficult space, and it, you know, that it also is kind of an attractive area for entrepreneurs, and that's why a lot of people have gone into this area is the food delivery. It's a little bit of a sexy area where a lot of people have kind of tried to have startups, but the problem is there's too many of them, and so that's why this evaluation got lowered so much.
I'm imagining the drones flying the dinners to their customers.
Yeah, that's in the near future, I'm afraid.
I don't think I want the drones delivering my eggs. But, you know, one thing, Michael, I got to ask you about is a lot of the selling points that companies like Blue Apron make to consumers is, look, we can provide you with exactly the ingredients you need. And contrary to what you might think, you're not going to pay more than if you went to the grocery store. Does that give them a bit of a tough margin, that it's hard to, even if they are doing really well, they don't have a lot of margin to play with because they're trying so hard to compete, literally saying, you know, you could go to Jewel and not pay any more than you would if you used our service?
Well, here's what I will compare it to. Amazon has been able to do that in retail and other areas. So it's proven that model can work. The issue with Blue Apron is the fact they have so many competitors, including Amazon. So I don't think the Krogers of the world are the ones that are going to be a problem for Blue Apron. It's going to be other competitors doing similar things. So the big box retailers, the fixed space retailers are the ones that are probably in the most trouble. It's really the fact, though, that Blue Apron has so many competitors trying to do that same thing. I think it's doable. It definitely is doable. That business model, it works in a lot of different areas. And like I said, Amazon is the proof that it works. But in this space, there's just so much competition.
It debuted at $10. The last time I looked at it was at $10.37. So will it be interesting to watch this as it progresses. Thanks so much for joining us. Michael Palumbo, founder of Third Millennium Trading, author of the book Calculated Risk here in Chicago. Ahead, Tech Thursday, how robots are affecting jobs. WBBM News Time, 12:37.
Buy, sell, listen. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday on the Noon Business Hour, sponsored by Baird. The field of robotics is expanding at a breakneck pace, and it's affecting the types of skills needed in the workplace. Let's learn a little more from Rick Cobb, Executive Vice President at Challenger Gray and Christmas here in Chicago. Rick, there is starting to be a fear that we are going to be losing jobs because of robotics.
Sure. And that's an accurate fear if you're looking at those jobs that put people at risk or can be easily replaced by automatic robotics manufacturing systems, calculations that are basic and routine. It's legitimate.
There are people in the workforce who want to know probably what your advice would be, and also the people who are going into college or in high school now.
Right. So the easy answer for those that are going into school, but it's also the same answer for those that are thinking about their future and their career, is the more connected you can be to technology and the STEM, science, technology, engineering, mathematics fields, the better off you are. And we're lifelong learners. There's a lot of neuroscience out there that's proven that we don't become fossilized. We actually continue to learn the entire time we're on the planet. The other thing that we lose track of is generally, no, we're very bad at predicting the future. We very seldom get it right. We've done a lot of studies on that. And one of the things that typically happens with new technologies is they become integrated into work. So many of the automation systems that came into play back in the original Industrial Revolution didn't eliminate jobs. It changed the type. So staying flexible, being involved in as many things as you possibly can, and understanding that automation still is a tool for productivity and what your role is. And the classic example of that in modern times is the average airplane pilot very seldom actually flies the plane anymore, 6 to 10 minutes maybe, but they spend a lot of their time very actively monitoring the systems and making critical decisions about whether they would need to override or make corrections.
So the key thing to remember here, as you said, is that, yes, we're going to see advances in technology. We're going to see some areas that maybe humans were doing before now being done by machines or by robots. But there will always be a role for humans, and the key to success here is make sure you adapt and you are adaptable.
Sure, and I think understand that all of the processes that are being impacted by technology are being impacted by humans, and they have their own motivations. You know, the safest roles are those where you are in support of the average person, whether it's healthcare, diet, occupational therapy, mental health, et cetera, clergy. But you always need that human interaction as long as we're here. And I guess you can, in the dystopian world, what's the robot do if we're not around?
Hangs out with other robots. Steve Wozniak, who's a co-founder of Apple, says that, yes, they're going to replace us, but not for a few hundred years. So I guess we have that to cling to. Rick, thanks for joining us today. Rick Cobb, Executive Vice President, Challenger at Gray and Christmas in Chicago. And join us at this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday. Still to come, there is history in this year's review of bank capital plans by the Fed.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
For the first time, all 34 participating financial institutions have received mandatory Federal Reserve approval for their capital plans this year. We are talking with Dick Beauvais, a bank analyst at Rafferty Capital Markets in Tampa. Dick, in fact, Janet Yellen said this week that the financial system is not likely to experience another significant financial crisis in our lifetime. What do you think of that?
Well, I don't agree with her, unfortunately. I mean, I would hope she would be right. But, if we take a look at the ratios that you would develop from a bank balance sheet, you would argue that she is right. I mean, because banks have more capital as a percentage of assets than they've had in 30 years. They've got more liquidity on their balance sheet than they've had in 30 years. And their loan-to-deposit ratios would argue that they can lend more money, again, than they could have in the past 30 years. So all of those numbers would argue that, in fact, she's correct. The reason I don't agree with her is because we've passed a lot of laws since 2010 and set up a lot of regulations, I don't know, supposedly 370 regulations, which, you know, affect the safety of the banking industry. And one theme which goes through all of those laws and all of those regulations is that banks must be allowed to fail. In other words, all of the protections that we've put into the banking system since 1913, when the Federal Reserve was created, have been eliminated. So now we're going back to the way banking was run in the 19th century in the United States, which is the capital of the bank has to protect against failure. And the fact is that it didn't work. In the 19th century, basically, we had massive failures of banking systems, of the U.S. banking system, on a continuous basis. In fact, after the Civil War, we had bank failures and depressions in 1873, 93, and 1907. So no, I don't believe that that we're in a position where we're safer. I think we're in a position where we're at much greater risk.
Even though the rules and regulations that you referred to were the result of the big collapse earlier this century.
But it wasn't a collapse. Right? In other words, there were protections that were in the system in 2007 and 8. You know, they didn't use them when Lehman went under, but they used them pretty quick when they thought that the whole system was going to go under, and it prevented a collapse. You know, when you go back to the years that I mentioned, if you pull out some history book, you'll find that the system collapsed. In 1837, for example, you had a depression which lasted as long as the one in the 1930s and was just as severe and just as horrendous in terms of its impact on, the American population. So, yeah, they did work in 2008, and they won't be there the next time the system is put under pressure in whatever year you think we're going to have the next recession or financial setback. In addition, she's not mentioning the fact that the government has nationalized the banking industry. Those 370 rules allow the government, first, to tell the banks, if you get too big, we'll penalize you. Second, you've got to put your assets where we tell you to put them. Third, you know, if we take a look at liquidity portion of the balance sheet, you got to put those assets in government bonds or at the Federal Reserve. We're going to tell you where you can get money from. We're going to tell you how much you're going to have to pay for money, and we're going to make you take this money that you're borrowing, and we're going to tell you where you have to lend it. So the net effect is, I think that weakens the system. I mean, I don't believe in, that a small group of people who totally blew it in terms of understanding what was happening in the financial system in 2006 and 2007 now are so smart that they can run the whole financial system, direct money through that financial system. I think, they've created substantially greater amount of risk in the system because of the rules that they put in place.
Dick Beauvais, the bank analyst from Rafferty Capital Markets in Tampa, thanks as always for joining us. And you'll find past programs and later today a podcast of this hour at cbschicago.com/audio and play.it.
WBBM News Time 12:56. Let's get the latest on the markets with Elisa Peretti.
Chris, a sharp sell-off today. The Dow down 201 points, trading to 21,250. NASDAQ down 131 points. That is a loss of more than 2% now for the composite on the day. The S&P lower by more than 1% or 27 points. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is down more than 1%. The tech sell-off has gathered steam, as you can see, and the composite now lower for the month as well. There are concerns that the sector rose too high, too fast, and keep in mind that the NASDAQ is still up more than 13% year to date. With with business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom. Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago. WCFS-FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.